I switched my glasses because I know that you have like your trademark glasses. And so these are the new ones. I thought that they're more of the Erica statement.
Hey, you know, if you got to wear glasses.
Right, right. Erica Farber, you're the CEO of the Radio Advertising Bureau, and my worlds are colliding. So this is a podcast, right? It's a medium I love. But it's an episode about radio, which is the medium I grew up in and I grew my career in. So usually my insider interviews are kind of free form, but I want to map out some buckets.
Well, you're the driver.
I am the driver. And that's one of the things I want to talk to you about, in-car radio and things like that. So for this episode, number 25, we'll start with some definitions. And a reality check of what's radio today. Like, I'm going to ask you, is it still called radio? Is it audio? Where do we go with that? And then we'll get into how it's evolved as a medium, who's listening through who's advertising, and if the business model has changed and the mission of the ad bureau, and an area that is really close to my heart, the ways that radio helps brands lead with purpose. Then, Erica, you can share how you went from the station side to running the country's trade association for the medium. Okay.
All this in 5 minutes, right?
That's right. So with that, I'm E.B. Moss, host of Insider Interviews, and this is Erica Farber. Erica, welcome.
What a treat this is. Thank you.
The treat's all on me. So what is radio today? Let's just go big or go home.
Well, it depends on who you ask. Radio is really ubiquitous. It is available on any platform you want to reach it. It is full of diverse content. It is a companion. It is a trusted source of information, news, and entertainment. It's available 24/7. Also, there's no cost to a consumer or listener to access it. And there's so many other attributes I could mention, but if you were to just share all of these attributes today without a name and said, is this something you would want? People would say, oh my gosh, absolutely. What a great thing.
Yeah. All right. That's good. And it's also this thing that still comes out of like big towers on hills and, you know, is broadcasting.
It's broadcasting. But again, you know, if you want to hear it on your smart speaker, you can access it that way. If you are sitting in front of your laptop or your computer, you can access it that way. So it's in your automobile. Again, it is multi-platform and it is available in any form that the consumer wants to access it to.
Love it. You know, I did an episode of Insider Interviews with Carl Fremont of Quigley Simpson. Yes, formerly Wonderman. I know, he's great.
Wonderful, wonderful guy.
And, you know, his dad used to literally manufacture radios.
I just found that out. Yeah. And it's amazing. This is the great thing about Zoom. You get to see people's environments.
Yes. And I see some behind you.
I do, but mine are certainly nothing compared to the collection that he has.
Ah, well, the other thing that he and I had in common is his dad used to build radios. And my aunt was very good friends with the man who made radio possible, Lee DeForest, who invented the vacuum tube. So I actually have letters from Lee DeForest. And then my dad was the first graduating class of Ithaca College to major in radio. So I'm telling you.
Well, your dad and I competed against each other in the 70s in New York.
Stop it. What?
All right. So your dad.
Yes.
Was the program director or the head of operations for KTU in the late 70s.
That's right.
And at the time, I was the general manager of WXLO 99X, which was competing with that radio station.
This is audio, so you can't see that I am slack-jawed.
We're connected.
We are. We lost my dad in 1981, right after KTU went to disco. And so the fact that you either knew of him or maybe knew him. That just, okay, this is officially my favorite episode now. Okay. Well,
he had a wonderful career in broadcasting.
Thank you, Erica. That just is so lovely. Oh, so, yeah.
Wow.
I know. Many years ago. Anyway, back to our mutual love, which is all things audio, I think. So I want you to explain at the RAB why you say that audio's hot and radio's hotter. Hotter?
Well, hotter. First of all, if you just think about the word audio, everything is focused on audio. You know, if you had even said the word podcast a few years ago, the majority of people would say, what are you talking about? And now there are over 2 million unique podcasts produced. It's incredible. And when you look at advertisers, products, everything is having an audio element to it. Now, not to say video isn't important, but one of the great, great things about radio, and it's a selfish thing for me to bring up, is it's not necessarily a primary activity. So you can be driving, you can be writing, you can be doing something else, but that audio sensation is still connecting with you, motivating you, and indirectly sort of moving your intentions, if you will. So if it's purchasing a product, thinking about a favorite song, getting involved in a news story, it's that subliminal sound that you're reacting to. You know, you as a voiceover person, you know the power of that voice and the power of what's going on in your mind when you hear that voice. That voice can be anything. Mm-hmm. And that theater of the mind still exists, and it's still so important and it's so powerful to, as I said, either influence a person's musical tastes or influence someone's ability to purchase a product.
Beautifully put. And I know we're going to talk about the business of radio and advertising and things like that, but I love that you brought up theater of the mind for two reasons. The first is I know we'll mention how personality recommendations and DJs are perceived as your friend and word of mouth is so powerful, but
that they're trusted.
Yes.
And yes, that's such an important word. When a personality that you're focused on, you begin to trust them. And, you know, word of mouth is probably the largest influencer. And when a personality is talking about something, either community oriented or a product or service, you believe them more because you trust them.
I'm a believer. I couldn't see. Okay. You know, I have a reputation for breaking into song.
You to break into song.
So on the theater of the mind aspect also, Hernan Lopez, who recently left Wondery, an amazing podcast company that he built, did that famous thing at all of our audio conferences where he would hand out blindfolds and make all of these big industry executives sit there with Wondery branded blindfolds so that he could play sound and let people picture, you know, that theater of the mind, leveraging that kind of thing to communicate the power of audio. I always thought that was brilliant. We touched a little bit about radio and podcasting, and you even host a podcast for the RAB called Radio on Main Street. And very nice job, by the way.
Thank you,
Erica.
Not as good as you, but thank you.
Come on. She's behind the mic. She's in front of the mic. So in terms of our discussion about where, you know, things change and where the lines are blurred, what's happening with podcasting and radio and any kind of competition, or is the sum of the parts just even better than ever?
Well, I think the latter, the sum of the parts is even better. You know, in many cases, local radio stations and personalities who have a traditional show, if you will, on a, you know, a 3 or 4 hour time period every day, they're extending their brands by having a podcast. At the same time, there are also people at the radio station who may not even be on the air, but who have a point of view. They may have a specific area of expertise, a hobby, and that's creating another brand extension for that radio station. Now, of course, we know there are these great national podcasts. You know, you're not a personality on a radio station every day, but again, you're extending the opportunity for audio to reach more and more people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I did host the Pet Patrol. Yes. Fluffy was last seen on the corner of Nassau and Witherspoon in Princeton. I swear to God.
That is community.
That is community.
Programming at its best.
Yep. Yeah, it might not have been the best programming, but it was community programming at its best. And I do want to talk about some of the values of radio as it's evolved. You know, all right, here's a really good example. We're knee deep in a pandemic. How do you think radio has risen to the challenge of the pandemic or been affected by it?
Well, first of all, everybody has been affected by it. But I will say, I have never been so proud to say that I work in radio as I have been since March of 2020. You know, you keep hearing that word pivot, which we're trying not to use anymore. But what these radio stations, and it doesn't matter the size of the market, the area of the country, as things started shutting down and everyone started working from home and consumers and listeners, you know, no one knew what to do. We've never experienced anything like this. But radio not only rose to the occasion, but they did what they do best. They put their arms around their communities. They consoled their listeners. They brought some humor to their listeners. They brought information. And, you know, just from a business standpoint, it wasn't that they were going out selling advertising. They were saying to businesses that were open, let us help you communicate to the market what your protocols are. What are you doing? How can we raise money to, you know, feed people, to clothe people, to help people keep their homes? We have example over example of individual local retailers who said if it wasn't for local radio, they would have lost their business.
Oh, that's so moving.
I mean, we have great examples. And again, I've always been proud to say that I work in radio, but gosh, what radio broadcasters have done is they went above and beyond. And I think, you know, as we hopefully are getting out of this pandemic, it's taking a little bit longer, I think, than we expected. But I think broadcasters have taken another look at their business and recognized that that this information that they've provided and this connection that they've provided is so important. And I think even when everyone's been vaccinated, okay, it's a dream, and we can go back to being face-to-face with people, I still think you will see that broadcasters will continue to embrace that marketing with purpose and continue to help the communities in which they broadcast.
I can't wait to dive into that more, especially when it comes to advertising. But back on the sort of pandemic side, or let's just call it the hell of 2020 side. Hopefully that's behind us. How has radio also served listeners? We talked about community connection. Can you talk about that?
Well, you know, sadly, the country's probably never been more divided than now than ever. Mm-hmm. And first of all, it depends on the format, because there are some formats that are very, very focused on having these kinds of discussions. There are other formats that are more entertainment focused. Not that they ignore this divisive world we're living in, but I think they've looked upon that as, let's not talk about what divides us. Let's talk about what we all agree on. And I think that's another very important focus for broadcasters to find common meaning and to find common voices that we can all feel better about. Because at the end of the day, everyone wants to have a roof over their head. Everyone wants to have a warm meal. Everyone wants to be healthy. That's not a red state or a blue state. That's just a human decency state. And I think that's where radio broadcasters, and you'd mentioned it a while ago, the personalities on these stations, that's why they become so important, because they are these trusted voices that just make you feel better.
Okay. And I think that also when we look at our increased climate challenges, radio is also something that's turned to. And you know, I don't mean to stomp for radio. Obviously, I'm a big fan, or I wouldn't be here.
We need as many advocates out there as possible, and I can't think of a better one than you.
Good. Well, then segue from me like teeing you up about weather conditions and turning to radio, and then the role of the RAB.
Well, there's really three or four areas we focus on. First of all, as the nonprofit trade association, we advocate on behalf of the radio medium with honestly everyone and anyone that will listen. And that includes advertisers, agencies, trade press, anywhere we can get that message out to ensure that there is a good understanding of all of the assets that radio has to offer. We are a member-supported organization, and so the other very, very important thing that we bring to our members is we provide products and services to help them increase revenue at a local level. Professional development is also very important, and we want to make sure that our sellers have the proper tools and to raise the level of professionalism as we present our medium locally and regionally and nationally. And then the last area that we're focused on is we want to ensure that the next generation recognizes that the radio industry offers a great career opportunity. And that's going to be very important because as business evolves and radio certainly continues to evolve, having these new voices with unique talents that many of us that have been around a long time, we don't have those specific talents. So by bringing them in, they're going to help mold and create what this next generation of radio is going to be all about.
Well put. And I would expect nothing less than that from the head of the RAB. But let's face the music a little, as they say. What kind of challenges has radio also faced lately? And I think that, you know, it has some detractors. There are people who talk about the decline in driving, as, you know, I mentioned at the start of the podcast, to competition from other sources of digital audio. What's happening?
Well, certainly the competitive environment has changed dramatically. You know, there was a time in radio that your biggest competitor was the radio station across the street, and that is no longer the case. So between social media and digital assets and how consumers consume information, it's changed dramatically. Radio still is the number one reach medium of anything.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. Now, what's certainly been affected is the time that people are spending with the medium. And that becomes the challenge because people are bombarded with information coming from all sources. And this is where technology helps the industry. But what radio has been adapting to is how can we continue to provide our programming and our news and information to consumers who are being bombarded? How do we break through? So that is certainly a challenge that continues to happen. And that's why you see radio stations who really have changed what their toolkit's all about. And that's an important thing to bring out. So when the pandemic hit and everyone started working from home, you know, you mentioned the automobile and how people were listening to radio. You're right. All of a sudden, the cars were parked in the garage. And radio did experience some loss of listeners due to that. And very gradually, and it was interesting, that all of a sudden people were starting to discover radio within their homes.
Mm.
And again, not necessarily because they had a traditional radio within their home, but they were recognizing that they could find these radio stations in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we sort of forget that even when the world shut down, there were people still going to work. You know, emergency services and healthcare workers. And there were certain categories that people, they didn't go home, they had to be out. And gradually you started to see city by city, and it depended on where you lived in the country, but those listening levels were coming back. Took a little while, but they were coming back. Again, the issue for radio is not the number of different people listening in or the total reach. It's how can we hold on to that individual listener longer? And that's the challenge.
And so how are you rising to that challenge? What are some tools and tactics, other than the fabulousness of Erica Farber touting the value of radio for the RAB?
Well, and that's where the strength of individual broadcasters come in. You know, you go into any market, you have major public companies broadcasting to individually owned, you know, radio stations. So it's that individual broadcaster or those individual groups of broadcasters that's what they focus on all the time. And making sure that they're connecting with those audiences. What do those audiences want? Do we understand the needs of that audience? And are we delivering our promise to those listeners? And that's where these great broadcasters come into play. And, you know, some of them do a brilliant job, and some are getting smarter, and they'll be brilliant too. You know, everyone's trying and everyone's focused on it, but it's not easy. It's not easy.
Back in May, one of your episodes of your RAB podcast, Radio on Main Street, you had sort of a tour de force of almost anyone who's anyone in broadcasting and research, from John Rosso and Tom Webster to Tony Hero of Nielsen. So let's talk about the challenges of measurement. How has that kept up with the times, and how are you promoting apples to apples measurement?
You know, it's a big question,
mm-hmm.
and it's a big question that's better left to the currency, because that's not what we do. We are a reflection of what's available to share about the marketplace. What I can say is that in addition to the currency that is doing the best, it's not easy to get your arms around it. Technology is going to make that a little bit easier, but I think individual radio stations and companies are also reaching out on a local basis to their audience to learn as much about them as possible. And from an advertiser standpoint, let's face it, when you go in and say, well, I'm number one in the market, what does that mean? To an advertiser, that doesn't mean anything. What the advertiser wants to know about your audience is, well, first of all, we need to understand from the advertiser, what is a problem they're having, or what are they trying to accomplish that we can help them with? So that's number one. But number two, if I make cookies, what that baker wants to know is, well, how many people that are listening to your audience like cookies? You don't have to be the number one radio station, but what you want to make sure is that you can bring people that like cookies to that baker. And that's where those local connections and local research become so important.
Okay. And I also will give your website a shout out. There's a lot of good information on the RAB site, yeah, and helps sort of frame things up very well. So let's move on to some of the qualitative things that you know, you're expert in sharing. Have advertising verticals changed? I did read an interesting article about auto insurance, for example. And we know there's a famous story in the industry. Anybody, you know, who's ever read anything in media knows that P&G famously has completely turned back to radio as a proven medium. So talk about advertising verticals, what's new, what's news?
Well, there's been such a big push to digital. And digital means so many different things to, it's a different definition depending on who you ask. And broadcasters also have really focused on digital as well. But in the case of a P&G or a lot of these national brands, what they were finding is as they had moved so much money onto digital assets, there was a tremendous amount of waste. Mm. Where was that money really going?
Mm-hmm.
And it had nothing to do with they didn't believe in digital, is that are dollars being targeted and reaching the right people? And when you have a company like P&G who took a step back and said, let's look at all the money we put in digital and let's find that waste. And they moved that money that was wasted and they put it back into a traditional bucket, if you will, such as radio. And they found that in combination with digital, when they added radio in, it had tremendous success.
Yes.
So it did affect the ROI. It was a much more efficient use of their advertising dollars, because no matter how big or small you are, those are precious dollars. That's an expense.
Yeah.
And you want to make sure, how do you turn that expense into a profit? And when you have the world's largest advertiser making decisions like that, then there are other companies that follow who look at that and say, we really do need to understand that there are some dollars that have been targeted into digital, that if we move some of them out, but we're going to continue to stay in digital. But by adding those dollars into broadcast, it's been very effective. And that's a great message for us and a great position for us to talk to advertisers about.
Good. My friend Pierre Bouvard over at Westwood One does great write-ups about Lyft studies and cooperative efforts in advertising. So I'll refer people to that.
Yeah. Great job.
And then what about targeting opportunities versus the scale message? How are you doing that these days?
This is something I'm sure that will resonate with you, is you can have the greatest media buy in the world, but if your creative message is off, it doesn't matter where you spend your dollars. And that's something that we care a great deal about. And we talk with advertisers about what are best practices, what should they be looking for? You know, is it possible to test commercials, which is great. I wish more would.
Mm-hmm.
That's not always possible. But it's the same thing with local. You know, we've all heard annoying commercials. But when you hear a great commercial, there's nothing better. You know, you just go back in time and you think about commercials from years ago, you can still sing the jingle. It still has meaning.
Don't tempt me.
Go ahead. Sing your favorite commercial.
Well, you know, you don't have to ask me twice, but I will tell you that I happen to have done an episode of my other podcast called It's Quite a Living with my stepbrother, Mark Blatt, who had been one of the foremost jingle writers with Look & Company and Gene Look. He wrote so many of them. So one example is, this is not your father's Oldsmobile. I probably butchered that one, and he did. I'm going to Disneyland. I'm going to stop singing now. Sorry.
That's fine. But, you know, you remember the old Blue Nun commercials?
Well, I remember a little bit too much Little Blue Nun at Rutgers University when you could still drink under the age of 21. That one?
But Stiller and Mara, I mean, you know, and Bob and Ray in New York. Oh my gosh. When they did a commercial, they were sold out. The advertiser, whatever it was. Paul Harvey, gosh, when Paul Harvey talked about something, you had to have it.
That's right.
You just had to have it.
Yeah, he was great at the cliffhangers. Now, I will give a current shout out to the inheritor of old school, Dick Orkin's daughter, Lisa Orkin, is running Orkin Radio Ranch, one of the best creative minds out there. And Tony Menuto, who's over at Horizons Division, Wordsworth and Booth, two of my favorite producers these days.
Fantastic. Yeah.
So totally, creative is the key to bringing that theater of mind to life. The other value, I think, that was talked about recently in an ANA article about radio is helping brands show their soul. We did a story on The Continuum, which I edit with Rashad Tabakawala about his book. And he was quoted in that article too, but it's so essential in such turbulent times for brands to show that they have purpose. How is radio helping brands align with that?
Well, it's becoming more and more and more important. Every research you see from consumers or listeners, they want to connect with people who have similar values. They want, especially younger audiences, they want, you know, what are you doing for good? What's that money being used for? Do you care about the environment? Do you care about the community? And I think it's really affected how radio looks at not only their programming, but, you know, one of the areas that was really affected through the pandemic are events. And radio does a fantastic job of feet on the streets and bringing live things happening in their town. And now with this sense of purpose, I think radio stations have really been able to focus on issues and areas that are meaningful to the people that are listening to their audience. And it's helping them, again, put their arms around that community and supporting things that are much bigger than all of us, but they unite all of us.
Yeah, I completely agree. Anytime I have the opportunity in marketing to get that cause message out there, I do. And I think that the thing about radio that I read is that because broadcasters have to buy a license to be on the public airwaves, that they have to sort of ensure that they're delivering community-oriented messages. Did I get that right?
Yes, absolutely. Really, the license is about they are broadcasting in a market in the public interest.
Yeah. It's like a trust aspect, again, that you mentioned before.
And I think that article, by the way, that you're referring to at the ANA was penned by Tammy Greenberg, who oversees business development for us at the REB.
Yes. It was chock full of info. It was a great article, I think, from December on the ANA site. All right, I want to bring things back to the future. I want to talk about the cool factor, the what's new, what are the new frontiers? And one of the things I read about, and this is on a format side, was sports betting radio. You live in Las Vegas now. And do you like Las Vegas?
Well, we love our house. but we go nowhere. So we could be living anywhere. You know, I don't know what it's like to really live in Las Vegas. I can tell you we're not on the strip. We're about 15, 20 minutes from it.
Yeah.
But you don't even realize it's there.
Well, yet until we can emerge from our little bubbles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Anyway, well, first of all, esports is going to be, it's already started, but the category is exploding. And Las Vegas betting is one thing, but you're going to see, you know, depending on how the laws are opening up, it's just growing leaps and bounds. Entercom is one of the companies that's made a huge investment in this area. Beasley is another company that's also made an investment in this area. So you're going to see a lot more of that. Mm-hmm. And I think out of that, you know, when you look at sports radio, that whole format really exploded. Now, it's been challenging when people aren't playing games, the pro games. But as doors are opening up, this is a tremendous growth area. And it's not only going to affect the content of stations, but talk about content that connects listeners. Sports fans are probably the most passionate fans.
Insane. Yeah.
Insane is a good word. And so it's a perfect evolution and a great way to use audio to connect these fans in a dynamic way.
That's a great point. I mean, there's the information side that we historically know, you know, oh, I'm turning to it for the weather, like we talked about before, for the news and, you know, what's happening in my community. And now the other passion, of course, sports radio. And my dad was a sportscaster, so I know that. But sports radio, man, embracing new areas. That's brilliant. Okay, that's cool. And then that is an area that can interface with digital so well, right? Oh,
absolutely. And I think as we see it evolve, it can also change the financial model. Because here's a medium that we have, you know, been associated with using 30s and 60 seconds to sell products. But I can see revenue shares, which would, maybe you don't even have commercials. So it could really be a totally different revenue model for a broadcaster who's focused on that.
Brilliant. I love that vision. And then just to take the vision one step further, a couple of years ago, you were interviewed in a Media Village article by my friend Ali Romano, and you then talked about voice interfacing with radio. And, you know, we spoke at the CES panel on voice a year ago. So how have things evolved with that sort of interfacing?
Well, so, you know, voice is changing everything. And when you just, again, you mentioned CES, and it was a couple of years ago where major products were saying that everything from your checkbook to your refrigerator to any product or service you can think of, that we're going to be connecting with them through voice versus touching something. And this was even before the pandemic. And you think about that now, they were saying, you know, people don't want to touch things. Now people really don't want to physically touch things. So the thought that voice will connect us is not only exciting, but it's a reality. And who better to take advantage of that than broadcasters?
So we'll be able to say, you're listening to a radio spot and you'll be able to use your voice and sort of like the old Jennifer Aniston sweater. Okay. That's great. What about getting into radio now? And Erica, you're a woman at the top of her game, and I've been a fan for a long time. How would you advise other women getting into radio and audio in general?
Well, first of all, as a woman, I cannot think of a better career path than radio. It has certainly afforded me a career I never expected to have. I also want to put in a little bit of a plug here for an organization that I have been involved with since 1999 called the MIWs, and it's Mentoring and Influencing Women in Radio.
Love it.
And we have a committed group of women who are using our own resources to help mentor and be a source to lift other women in the industry who want to move up. Now, what this career offers is whatever you want to take out of it, because it's not about just necessarily, I want to be on air. But, you know, if you have video skills, we need that. Digital skills, social media skills, connecting with audiences, the area of purpose. I mean, if you feel strongly about your marketplace and doing work that's good to bring this to broadcasters, these are the kinds of people and assets that broadcasters are looking for.
I love that. And I'm going to add that to the show notes. And you helped me walk down memory lane, because I realized that my first female boss became the general manager of Nassau Broadcasting Company.
Joan.
Back in the day, Joan Gerberding. You know,
I just talked to Joan 2 days ago.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
And I was side by side with Joan with the MIWs.
Oh my gosh, I have goosebumps. And, yeah. And you've brought this podcast full circle the way only a professional in broadcasting can do. Erica Farber, thank you so much for all of this information and wrapping it up with a bow. That was awesome.
Well, thank you. And I love your passion. And we know deep down that radio is your number one medium.
You know, it is.
We know that.
All right. We'll see you on the radio, as they say.
Perfect.
I hope you got some good insider scoop from this episode of Insider Interviews with me, E.B. Moss. And I hope you'll follow Insider Interviews on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and let me know if you have a question or suggestion for our next guest. My theme music was composed and performed by the incomparable and Grammy-winning John Clayton. If I can help you with your company's podcast, please find me at mossappeal.com. And thanks again for listening.